Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 12th and final round.
Right hand, Golovkin steps in and down he goes again. Unbelievable. Mayweather makes him pay. What a rookie mistake. A sensational left hook by De La Hoya.
It's facts. I'm the best. You know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to believe it myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
All right, welcome back to the last round. And here, instead of the last round for this episode, it's round number two with Mr. Kevin Ioli of Yahoo Sports, who joins us for the second time on this podcast. Welcome again to the last round, Kevin.
Thank you, Danny. Good to join you.
Thank you. So, as we said, we appreciate you jumping on this week. Just like we asked you, I think, before, how are you doing during this whole especially this whole pandemic? How are you holding up? How's Vegas out there? How's the heat?
The heat is the bad thing right now. We're like 115. It is pretty rough. Every day is a scorcher. But, you know, Vegas is still struggling. We're not going to have fans at fights here for a long time. I don't think we're going to have fans anywhere, really, for quite a while. But certainly in Vegas, that's not going to happen. Top Rank was hoping to do it for the Lomachenko-Lopez fight. And now they're not going to do that. They're going to go forward with no fans. So I think there's going to be some fights that we don't see as a result of it. But, Vegas is, they're getting good at bubbles. So the UFC bubble, I've been in quite a bit. That's strong. I've also been in the Top Rank bubble, and things are working out fairly well.
Perfect. Obviously we wanted to touch on probably the most appealing news, at least to the casual fan at the top of this episode. And it's the Tyson versus Jones Jr. I believe we were talking about just before we came on air that you were the first to break the news about the event. Can you tell us, like, when you were hearing about it, or when you finally got that confirmation that it was actually happening, what was your reaction? Can you take us through your mindset?
Yeah, I was stunned. I mean, when this all came out, when Mike started putting the videos out of him training, I thought it was a product placement. You notice he was always wearing a t-shirt with some kind of ad on it. And I thought, he's just trying to get product out there that he was working on. And I didn't really believe he was serious after being away since 2005. And I had interviewed him on camera, I think it was in April or May. And I asked him and he said, no, I don't have it in me to fight anymore. So when I saw that, I was like really surprised. And you kept hearing Holyfield and Roy Jones were the two that were in the running. And what happened the morning that the story broke, it broke about 8 o'clock. I put it out about 8 o'clock Pacific time. But at 5 Pacific time, I got a phone call and said, 100% the fight is on. So it's, early in the morning, even on the East Coast. And I don't know how to, at this point, who do I need to reach to find out? And I couldn't take one person's word for it. So I'm trying to get, other confirmation that it was going on. And it was a little difficult to reach anybody at that point. But I was, my biggest emotion was shock. I mean, I didn't really think it was true. And here we are with now Mike coming back.
Kevin, I believe today, was it The Ring announced that they've pushed it back to November 28th due to, I think they were saying, getting overseas contracts and pay-per-view, and maybe because Jake Paul got arrested by the FBI, I'm not too sure. So.
Now, let's hope he's into Slammer. We don't need to put up with him, but I saw he's offering bounties for $10,000 for anybody who's in a wrestling match, so I know a few people that might be able to handle him.
But so that is a confirm. I mean, I think, I don't know if they put out an official word, but they are pushing it back to November.
Yet. I mean, I think that's going to happen, but not confirmed as of yet.
So do you think that will be pushed out since it is being reported, even though it's not confirmed yet?
Yeah, I do. I think the reports are accurate. I just don't think it's been actually announced yet. They started behind the eight ball. Triller is a good streaming service, but they need to get it on television as well if you really want to do a big number. And I think they have a chance to do a big number with Tyson. I wrote a column the day that this happened. And one of the things I said was the reason that people are going to buy it is you just don't know what Tyson's going to do. You can say, yeah, it's a sparring session. They're not going to try to knock out. But what if Roy hits him a little harder than Mike thinks he should hit? What does Mike do? And I've been there I was there at the bite fight when Mike went crazy and bit Holyfield. And it was chaos. And I mean, Las Vegas was turned upside down for about 12 hours because of that. And so, you know, I know Mike is capable of doing a lot of things. And I think that's what the appeal of the fight is. What does Mike do? You know, it was like, is he still the same Mike Tyson that he was back in his heyday when he was wild and crazy?
Kevin, do you think we'll see just a big influx with this? Is it League of Legends? So it looks like we'll potentially see Evander Holyfield return. He keeps posting different pictures and videos of him training.
I think what since the people I've talked to subsequent to this happening and Mike, I think what Tyson's angling for is to actually make a couple of comeback fights. So this is an exhibition, and I think he wants to actually take a regular fight. So I think Holyfield might be the guy that he wants to fight in the quote unquote regular fight. I'm against 50-year-old guys fighting. You know, I'm really against most 40-year-old guys fighting. I think if you're fighting 50 versus 50, it's a lot better than 50 versus 30 or 50 versus 25. And so I think, you know, the League of Legends is one thing over here. And I certainly think Mike wants to use his notoriety to get that kicked off. But I also think that, you know, Mike is looking at this is maybe a chance to make a couple of fights and make some money and whatnot, but he's got that itch. And, you know, Dana White, the UFC president, is a very close friend of Mike's. And he told me that, and I think he said this at a press conference, he said he went to dinner with Mike and Evander and said, please, please, please don't fight. And he said, Mike just told him, you know what, Dana, I have it inside of me. I feel like I can do it. And if I don't do it now, I'm never going to do it. So that's why I'm going forward.
It's crazy. 2020 has just gone crazy. We've got Sergio Martinez returning on August the 21st. And I just read and posted on our Twitter that Michael Nunn is back in the ring. I think it's the week after.
A couple weeks ago.
He's back again, though, boxing, because he fought kickboxing match against Pat Miletic. Yeah. And then he's fighting in the ring, I think, on the 28th or 29th of August. So nostalgia everywhere.
Yeah, it's really sad, you know, because boxing is not a sport that you can play. You know, you can go out there and have a seniors tour in golf or in tennis, and it may not be as good a golf or as good a tennis as they played it, you know, during their prime. But when you're getting punched in the head and you're 50-some years old after a lifetime of getting punched in the head, you know, that doesn't speak well of your short-term future. And I really just don't like it, and I think it's sad. But a lot of these guys, you know, Michael Nunn, they just have no other source of income. You know, he was in prison for, you know, 20 some years, and he gets out and, you know, the only thing he knows how to do is fight. And it's really sad, but that's the situation we find ourselves in.
Since we're talking about returns, Kevin, Dana White has been reportedly talking to TMZ, talking about he's still trying to convince Floyd Mayweather to get back into the ring in some kind of exhibition. Any news on that from Las Vegas?
The last I've talked to Dana about that, nothing, you know, just the fact that they hope to do it. They think it's a good business opportunity. I think, you know, Floyd's situation changed a little bit because of the events of this year. You know, his uncle Roger passed away. He was very close with his uncle Roger. Then his daughter got into some trouble and got arrested. She got into a fight with a rapper, and the rapper was supposedly her boyfriend, and he was with some other girl, and so something happened. So he's had a number of personal issues come up in his life that I think maybe make him think twice about fighting again. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if he did the whole go to Japan and fight, you know, a kickboxer that, you know, type thing. But I don't know that you're going to see him take a fight against a Habib or somebody like that.
How serious do you think Floyd is about the coaching role? Or are they just, you know, tactfully select pictures that he takes for his Instagram?
Yeah, I don't think Floyd is not the kind of guy that I think is going to be there day after day in a training camp and work. And, you know, I've known Floyd since he was 15 years old. And that's just not him, you know, and especially now that he has money and he likes to travel and likes to go around and, you know, and he also likes to sleep in. If you want to call Floyd, you don't call him at 9 in the morning. You wait till 9 at night or later. And so, you know, Floyd, I just don't see that lifestyle. I think there's going to be a fighter every now and then, and I think he's excited about Devin Haney, that he feels like has potential. So he wants to kind of get connected with that fighter, and he'll show up and work the mitts with him and that type of thing. But as far as him being the trainer and being the guy there every day and making sure the guy's out running, that's not the Floyd I know.
Mm. Kevin, you know, kind of relating Floyd's situation, you know, about obviously potentially coming back if there's a business opportunity, kind of back to Tyson and Jones Jr. Obviously, if Jones and Tyson get rescheduled to November, if they produce a pretty high number in pay-per-view buys or television ratings or what have you, doesn't that just pretty much kind of push Mayweather to kind of in that direction, like solidify his decision? Like, oh, you know, there's still a market for us there. And he's, you know, he's obviously has a proven track record. So he might just do it, especially after seeing the success of Tyson Jones Jr.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think there's certainly something to that. But I think, you know, the issues in his personal life, especially Uncle Roger, you know, being gone, I think will affect him quite a bit. You know, they were really, really close. And not that Roger was even training him at the end, but, you know, Roger was always at the gym and, you know, was around. And I think that Floyd, you know, I think he's lost his love for it at this point, you know. Every time he thinks he needs money or, you know, then he's thinking about it. Cause you know, how do you not think about 250 or 300 million? Right. I mean, that's difficult to not think about, but you know, especially in a fight that, you know, you're going to win. But I think, you know, unless he gets desperate, I don't think he's going to come back.
Can you see him being an actual trainer, like a consistent trainer in the corner of a fighter, or maybe he'll just do it when he's in the gym just to hit the mitts and give him his advice, but not in the ring?
Yeah, as I said a second ago, I think he wants to be a mentor and he wants to attach his name to some guys that he thinks has really good talent and fighters that, you know, potentially could sign with Mayweather Promotions. And so those are things that I think he would want to do. But I just don't see Floyd, you know, hey, getting out there, getting a guy on the road at, you know, 4 a.m. and, you know, and doing all the things that a trainer has to do. You know, we see from the movies and when we go to training camps, you know, we see them hitting the mitts and doing that. But we don't see all the hard work that these guys put in the long hours for, you know, in a lot of cases, really low pay. And I don't think Floyd is too interested in that. And, you know, the money he would make, he would call chump change. And, you know, so I don't think, you know, you're going to see him do that, to be honest with you.
Kevin, we've had the UFC came back and, you know, obviously they started off the bubble and pretty much every promotion, boxing promotion has now come back. But I think we'll all safely say that UFC has been the most successful in terms of, you know, getting the big fights and getting the big viewers. Eddie Hearn seems to have a bit of a love-in with Dana White over the last few recent weeks and interviews he's done. What do you think boxing can take from the UFC model that makes them so successful?
I've said this for a long time, and I'll use Floyd again as an example. You know, Mike Tyson or Floyd, you pay them whatever they want because they are worth it and they're going to sell tickets. They're going to sell pay-per-views. They're going to make that money back for you. But I think boxing has a problem where most guys don't earn what they're paid and they're vastly overpaid. And so, you know, if you think about it, a guy that, you know, draws $5 million for a fight and doesn't sell 100,000 on pay-per-view, is he earning that money? You know, you're not in boxing. You're not paid by performance. You're paid by how many tickets you sell and how many pay-per-views you sell at the top level. You know, when you're on your way up, you get more based on performance, but you're never going to get rich that way. But once you kind of get to that elite part, now you make your money when you're, you know, when you become an attraction. You know, Manny Pacquiao did that. Floyd Mayweather did that. You know, Conor McGregor in the UFC did that. Mike Tyson, I think, was the biggest draw of all time, you know, proportionate. Those guys could do it. But I think we have a problem in boxing where so many guys are paid this astronomical amount of money. And so even forgetting the pandemic, it was hard for promoters to get anything. It was not at all uncommon where HBO would pay a $5 million licensing fee and it would go to the A side and the promoter would have nothing. And so if you want to have people stay in business and promote the business and grow it like the UFC does, there has to be some incentive for them. And I realize the fighters take great risks and, you know, and I'm sympathetic to that, but I think it's a two-way street. And I just think they have to knock the, you know, the high end pay down, you know, maybe bring the bottom end up and the top end down. And when you do that, and that's what the UFC did, they can make matches that are evenly matched and affordable. And so they're entertaining fights. You go into, you know, boxing and you're finding people that like Terrence Crawford, look at they're trying to do the, you know, they're trying to dredge up somebody to fight Terrence Crawford, but they're not looking at the person that the people really want to see, Errol Spence Jr., because they can't afford to pay him.
Since we're talking about the salaries, and obviously you live in Nevada, what's your opinion on the Nevada Athletic Commission now not publicizing how much the fighters make?
I really dislike that, and I think it's a disservice. And I think, you know, it helps the really rich fighters, but it doesn't really help anybody else. And, you know, managers, you know, share information, but now you don't know. You know, maybe a manager feels like he has an edge and he's not going to share his or her, you know, numbers with somebody else because he's able to get successful. I think in the long run, it ends up hurting fighters. You know, having that money out there publicly, and you can say, this is what they make. And we know both in boxing and MMA, more so in MMA than in boxing, that they make more than what is announced by the commission. But one of the commission's jobs is to guarantee that they're paid what's in their contract. If you want to pay them more, great, pay them more. But they're supposed to be paid at least what's in their contract. And now you're taking that away, they lose a lot of leverage. And, you know, the managers, I think there'll still be some sharing of information, but not as much as there was before. I think it ends up hurting the fighters badly.
I think it was last year Dana White spoke about Zuffa boxing. Obviously, due to the coronavirus, I'm sure that's put that on the back burner. You know, he's spoken several times in interviews about how the business of boxing is broken. Do you still think that Dana may come over in 2021 or maybe even 2022?
He loves boxing. I mean, he really, really loves boxing. And the other thing I think he loves is, you know, he likes the challenge of saying, I'm going to take something that's done in the dumps and do it again. Because when he did it the first time, not a lot of people were paying attention. Now, after the UFC became successful and so popular, you know, he obviously has gotten a lot of attention and a lot of credit for that. But I think, you know, now he likes that, you know, being in that spot again. Hey, look, I think boxing is, you know, down in the dumps and I want to be the guy to turn it around. So I think there's a lot of interest to him. The last time I talked to him, you know, we were just, you know, shooting the shit. And he basically said, you know, it's a very bad business model and it's hard to make money in that. But I think, you know, what I just said, you know, tease into it. If somebody can get the salaries down where, you know, instead of paying, you know, a Terrence Crawford $5 or $7 million to fight, not really the most tough, you know, difficult fight, and you pay him $2 or $3 million, you have a lot more money left over and there's an ability to do something. And so I think if, you know, if he ever sees that, you know, he can affect a change, he loves boxing with a great passion. He bets it, he watches it. I think he'll do it, but I don't think he's going to do it under the current circumstance.
Kevin, about so for I'm going to ask a Dana White question. So, you know, for Dana White, obviously, like Mike just mentioned, he's talking about Zuffa boxing. Obviously, he probably put it on the back burner, his plans. But kind of playing devil's advocate in terms of pay, if he wants to get people to sign, you know, to come to his promotion, if he does enter the boxing business, I mean, wouldn't the logical thing be to, you know, offer, just like how DAZN came and started offering these, exuberant amount of contracts in terms of money? Like, wouldn't he have to do that and kind of raise the bar in terms of, you know, money with these fighters? And wouldn't it just kind of keep hurting the sport from a financial aspect?
Well, I mean, I think you see the answer with DAZN, right? I mean, they're already cutting back. You know, they've taken some Eddie's money away. Al Heyman's cutting back. You know, he was overpaying a lot of guys. You know, he's now, you know, cutting it back. And so I think that, you know, while on the surface what you say makes sense, you know, that's not how Dana does business. I think Dana would say to a fighter that he was thinking of signing, look what we're going to do for you. You know, we will promote you like you haven't been promoted before. And they're great promoters. You know, I deal with promoters on all sides of it. In the UFC, from a promotional standpoint and getting information out, getting their word out, marketing, there's nobody in boxing close. Nobody. And, you know, and if they had boxing, you know, people, they would do that. And then they increase their value by doing that. So I think that that's a big, you know, a big part of it. But, you know, I understand why you say, hey, wouldn't he have to overpay? And it wouldn't surprise me if he overpaid for, like, say, a one-off fight to put on UFC Fight Pass to see how it did. But I don't think you're going to see him on a consistent basis. He didn't get the UFC to where it is by doing that. And, you know, and he's been willing to, you know, look at what he's done with John Jones and everybody. You know, he's been willing to let somebody walk away and say, I'll move to the next one, because, you know, he knows that people like the product. You know, he's built a product that's entertaining, that's flashy, that appeals to a very, you know, desired demographic, you know, the 18 to, you know, 49 year old men. And I think, you know, he feels confident he could do that again with boxing.
He mentioned he had mentioned before in the past, like Mike said in interviews like last year, that he has somebody who is kind of advising him on boxing. He has a person or might be a couple people. Have you ever kind of did some digging or kind of got wind of who that is or who he's talking to?
It's crazy. I have tried to find that out. And, you know, and in fact, one day I was sitting in his office and I said, do I know this person? He thinks about it. And he said, you might know him, but maybe not. You know, he goes, you might know him. And I know a lot of people. And, you know, so the fact that he didn't say right away, yes, you know, I've heard it's an outsider, somebody that is not a familiar boxing name, but that has been a deal maker and has done business. But, you know, that is a really good secret that they've kept. You know, I think there's very few people that know who it is. I have some really good friends over there that usually know a lot of information that have no idea about that.
Do you think that, you know, somebody like Peter Nelson, obviously, I think they announced today that it was reported today that he's leaving HBO Sports or, you know, because he doesn't like the direction it's going in. Who knows if he's leaving on his own accord or there's some issues there. But, I mean, could you see like a Dana White kind of maybe picking up a Peter Nelson, be like, hey, come join Zuffa if it gets off the ground, if Peter Nelson isn't working anywhere like that?
I think there's some people in boxing that he could do that with, but I think he feels like the leadership in boxing has just had it wrong for decades. And so, and I think he looks at Peter Nelson as a part of that. And so I don't think he wants those kind of people. Like I think he would have some interest in Richard Schaefer at some point. If, you know, if Richard Schaefer were to go on, you know, Richard's a smart guy, has been in the boxing business for a long time. I think, you know, that there could be a match with them to a degree. I know he's friends with Lou DiBella. You know, they've had some conversations, but I think there's very few people in the boxing business that he feels like can run an effective business. And so that's why I would laugh that, you know, anybody would think that it would be a Showtime person, that which I've heard a million times, or you know, now Pete, you brought up Peter for the first time today. I just don't think that he looks at those people the same way that a lot of the people in boxing do.
It'd be interesting, Kevin, just to see how he tries to cut out the WBC, the WBA, the WBO, and obviously just have whatever he entitles it, you know, like the UFC boxing title. But it'll be good, though, because obviously, you know, you're going to have one champion per division like the UFC does, and then obviously all the names will be under one banner. So, you know, number one fights number two. If not, okay, you miss out, you go to the back of the pile, which, you know, in the UFC is something that I think all boxing fans, no, we love, because obviously at the minute you've got Terence Crawford, like you spoke earlier, you know, that classic phrase of, oh, you're on the wrong side of the street because all the other guys are at the PBC. So, you know, in a kind of like a weird way, I would like to see Dana come in and, you know, push that UFC model.
Yeah, you know, I mean, when you think about it, there's 17 weight classes in boxing and there's four organizations that give belts. And if you want to count the ring, you know, a fifth one. And if you go, you know, 17 times four, you got 68 potential champions. Then you add interim champions and franchise champions and, you know, and all these other bullshit belts that they give out. You know, and I just think that it's hard, unless you're a really avid boxing fan, it's hard to know who's the champion and who has the belts in what division. And so how do you promote somebody if, you know, you don't know who the champions are? And so I think it's, you know, for boxing to get fixed at the start, even before you bring, you know, Dana White and Zuffa into it, I think you have to have some kind of internal and say, hey, look, we got to get these sanctioning bodies. And I wrote a thing, you know, before. I think that rankings are important, right? So what happens now is if you're the champion or you're the mandatory for, say, the WBC, you don't get ranked by the other organizations. And I think so they got to do away with that. Rank the best guys. Even if you're champion at WBC, you should be ranked in the IBF or the WBA. That's number one. I think they have to tweak the mandatory rules, right, and change that, and not have the mandatory or lessen it, because I think the mandatory screw up so many fights that people want to have. But I think we have to get the organizations together first, and if we can do that, then I think, you know, and that's easier said than done. Believe me, it's easy for me to sit here and say that to you, but it's not easy in practicality to get it done. But I think that's the only way we're going to push boxing, because boxing to me is in kind of a golden age right now. If you think of the young talent that's in this sport up and down the divisions, you know, I know, Michael, you're wearing a Virgil Ortiz shirt. You got Devin Haney, you got Teofimo Lopez, you know, so many great fighters, you know, Noya Inoue. There's so many great young fighters, you know, say under 25 years old, under 30 years old. The heavyweights are, you know, there's some good looking heavyweights coming around now. But we're not getting the fights because everybody's scattered all over the place, and this guy's not fighting that guy, and this promoter doesn't work with that promoter, and this guy's ranked in this division, and he has that mandatory. And that is the nut that we have to crack. There's so much good going on, and I really want the world to see why I love boxing so much and why I'm so bullish on what's going on in boxing. But this nonsense, the way they operate, has to be totally cleaned up. And it is, you know, to use a phrase that Donald Trump used, they got to, you know, drain the swamp.
Kevin, it seems more now than ever, you have a lot of the young prospects just demanding more money for the big fights. Obviously, you know, this year we've got, this week, Teofimo Lopez wanting more money for the Lomachenko fight, and Ryan Garcia wanting more money for every single fight that he's going to step into the ring for. What do you think they can do, you know? Do you think that UFC model where kind of everyone's under one banner and you either take that fight or it's just back to the back of the line, off you go?
I think the promoters have to bite the bullet. And, you know, you're starting to see that happen. You know, Golden Boy passed on Ryan Garcia. And I think every individual situation is a little bit different. Not everybody is the same. You know, Ryan Garcia is different than Teofimo Lopez. But I think, you know, when you look at the circumstances, let's take Lopez and Lomachenko. You know, Lomachenko took less than he was contractually obligated to take. Lopez now, who is, hey, I love Lopez, and you know, you've seen, I've written many, many stories on him, and saw him in the Olympics, and really like him as a fighter and as a person. But he's the B side in this fight, and he's the young guy going up, and he's trying to take way more money. There's no fans going to be there. You know, it's going to be a difficult situation. You can't do that. I think they've offered him his highest purse of his career times two. Hmm. To me, that seems pretty good at this period of time. And if you gamble on yourself and you win, then, you know, then you really, you hit the jackpot. Even if you gamble on yourself and you lose, but you fight a good fight, you hit the jackpot. People are going to want to see you again. But I think that's the problem. I think the promoters just have to sit there and say, okay, you know what? I'm sorry. And they can't give in. You know, it's kind of like the baseball owner signing those free agents, you know, and they're saying, nobody's going to sign this guy for $50 million a year until somebody does sign him for $50 million a year. And I think in boxing, they have to wait and just try to hold out and say, you know, we got to do something. And it's different than baseball because the money is there in baseball. So they can afford to pay Gerrit Cole $35 million a year to pitch for the Yankees because the Yankees are making money and the money is there. It's just not there in boxing. That's the problem. I'm not saying it because I want to see the fighters get screwed. I want to see the fighters do extremely well. But I also know I want to see the business as a whole do well and survive. And if we're paying a very small amount of the fighters a very large amount of the money, it's not going to work.
I agree with that, Kevin, in terms of, you know, the promoters actually need to kind of maybe kind of put their foot down because, like you said, it would kind of start a trend if a lot of these fighters, especially the younger ones who, you know, have to get to this opportunity to kind of prove themselves or get to that level, and they complain or they say they either want more money. If the promoter gives in, that kind of sets like a precedent, especially during a pandemic where there's a, you know, millions of people unemployed and affected by, you know, everything that's going on at the moment. I mean, do you think it's just like, I don't want to say that these fighters are inconsiderate of the current times, but do you think it's just, they're not registering?
You just said it, Danny.
Well, I kind of want to know his opinion on it. That's why.
Here's what I think. You know, I think everybody's got to look out for themselves. The three of us do, the fighters do. So that we start with that. But you also have to take, you know, circumstances. You know, I'm not going to go to Yahoo next week and say, you know, I've been thinking about it and I want to be paid, you know, 20 times more than what I'm making right now. They're going to say goodbye, you know, and that, you know, that's the way it goes. And so I think, you know, you have to assess the marketplace, look at what's going on. And these guys should want partnership in the sport. They want this. They should want the sport to do well, because if the sport does well, they do well, and they'll appear in commercials and they'll get, you know, they'll get bigger. Look, go back to when boxing, I think, was last big, Sugar Ray Leonard, right?
Right.
Look at how many places he was, you know, and how many commercials he was in and products he endorsed. That can happen again. Mm-hmm. But I think that, you know, the sport has to grow. And the reason that the sport isn't growing is because, you know, the public has said, you know what, they fool me so many times. I buy these pay-per-views, I buy these fights, and I don't see what I want to see. So I'm gonna blow it off.
Do you think part of the problem, Kevin, is the Mayweather effect, where, you know, people like Ryan Garcia, maybe even Teofimo Lopez, are kind of thinking, you know what, this is a tricky fight, and they want a good chunk of money to kind of sell that all?
I think Floyd did a lot of good, you know, by taking on his own career, but he also did a lot of bad because the value of money is distorted. Now, when is $1.5 million a bad purse, right? Yeah. I mean, you know, I think Teofimo's biggest purse, if I'm not mistaken, to this point in his career is $300,000. So now you're going to say $1.2 million is what was reported he was offered. That's not an acceptable purse, you know. I think Floyd, you know, put the value of money out there. When you're talking basically these numbers that are like monopoly money, you know, it's hard to, you know, grasp how much actual money at $1.5 million is, or $2 million is. I mean, that is a lot of freaking money. And if you fight three or four times a year, you know, so if you sit there and say, let's take the big fighters and say they fight three times a year, you know, maybe the heavyweights twice. You know, you make $10 million a year, you're making a ton of freaking money. And if the sport is bigger and you can have ancillary income and, you know, money that just shows up, you get a, you know, check that, you know, because you endorse this product or, you know, that product. I just think that they're so much better off, you know, but they're not in demand like they should be. And there's so many great personalities out there. You know, Ryan Garcia, you know, is one of them that you mentioned. Teofimo is another one that I think these people would be adored if the public at large knew more about them.
Kevin, do you think we'll ever get to the stage where people in boxing actually respect people with defeats on their record? Because in MMA, it's kind of looked at that person's fought some hard people. Because look at some of the big names like Masvidal, Nate Diaz. They have multiple losses on their record, and they're still pay-per-view stars.
Yeah, I think the difference is, you know, we know in MMA that the fighters are going to be matched tough. And so as a result of them being matched tough, you accept the fact that, you know, they lost a fight and say, hey, everybody loses. It's a stylistic thing. But in boxing, so often, you know, you have these upsets that happen and guys aren't matched tough and they lose as big, you know, favorites. And then you say, ah, he's not that good. Well, it's just maybe it's a bad night, or you don't know what was going on in his life. He was fighting with his wife, or, you know, there was something going on that, you know, or the other guy was better than we thought. There's a lot of reasons that, you know, guys lose a fight. But I think you're right. We cannot lose sight of the fact. I want every boxer to go out there and give me an exciting fight. Give me the best of what he has on that night. And if he does that and he loses, God bless you. You know what? I want to see you again. But if you, you know, if you kind of just don't do that and you don't give that effort and you kind of cruise, then, you know, then I'm going to say, you know what? You're there just to collect a paycheck. I don't want to support you.
We saw an exciting women's fight on the weekend, Terry Harper against Natasha Jonas, which ended in a split draw. Do you feel that they should end up moving to the 3-minute rounds, the same as the male fighters?
That is my sense. You know, now I've talked to some doctors. I did a story during the Olympics in 2016, and they were talking about headgear. And this is kind of related to the length of the rounds. And they said that, you know, they did a big, long study on the men, and they felt that the men physically, you could take the headgears off and they would be okay. The women, they weren't still sure. They said their skulls were different, and so they didn't. And I think the 2-minute round is related to that. I am in favor of it because I feel like they're, you know, the MMA fighters can fight 5 minutes and there hasn't been any problem with it. But I think, you know, I would defer to the experts on that one. I think it would help them if they fought 3 minute rounds because of this. Here's what I think happens a lot of times in women's boxing. How many times do you see a woman who is 16-2 with one KO? A lot, you know, a lot of really good fighters because, you know, they get into a round, they start to break somebody down, they get them in trouble, and then the bell rings. Mm-hmm. They don't have the time that last minute to try to finish them off. And I think, you know, that really hurts them. And so I think, you know, that if they could go to that extra round, that would be better for the women because I think people mistakenly think the women don't have punching power. Believe me, they do. You know, not all of them, but a lot of them, most of them, they can hit, but they don't have the knockouts on their record. And that's the one way that we equate, you know, punching power is how many knockouts they have. And I think a lot of it is attributable to the 2 minute rounds. So I would be in favor of 3 minute rounds for women if doctors said it was safe. And I know there've been several studies, but I haven't seen any result of those yet.
I think that they need it because if you look at the women's UFC, you know, that's popular, very popular. And one of the biggest fights this year, and I was actually, luckily, I was there, was Joanna Jędrzejczyk against Wang Li.
Wang Li Zhang, yeah.
Yeah, that fight was unbelievable, one of the best fights of the year. And obviously they do, you know, five-minute rounds. So I can't really see the WBC and some of the other, you know, belt holders saying that they can't do it for, you know, doctors' reasons when we have the UFC. They get punched in the head and they get kicked in the head. Right. So, you know, that's surely worse.
I agree with you. And I've had that conversation with Mauricio Sulaiman, you know, and then he'll start telling me about doctors and, you know, but I don't ever get data, right? You know, he says, mm-hmm. This doctor said this and this doctor said that. Well, I don't want to hear you telling me what that doctor said. Send me the report that they did a study over time that was a peer-reviewed study. And it shows that when I wrote the piece in the Olympics, you know, talking to the doctor who was the head of FIBA, about the why they took the headgear off the men. And, you know, he had a peer-reviewed report that they had done that I could read and that, you know, other doctors had examined and said this made sense. And so I think that, you know, that's why, you know, that was an acceptable thing. You know, so that's what they need for the women. But I agree. I mean, I think based on MMA, women can fight 3 minute rounds, no question about it. And they should. It would be fair. And I think it would help them in the long run.
I think in terms of moving women's boxing on to the next stage, because, you know, we watch it for gladiatorial reasons. You want to see a KO. If you know that a women's fight is 99% of the time going to go 10 rounds, then you're probably not going to watch it.
Yeah, I think that happens a lot. And I think, you know, like one of the things I also think is, you know, there's this segment of guys that, you know, they're sitting on their back porch chugging beer. And so they, you know, who's the baddest ass out there? And so that's why they like Tyson, because, you know, they know Tyson gets out and, you know, he blows guys away. And they never say, well, I could go out there and beat Mike Tyson. But I think what happens both in MMA to the lighter weight, like why have the flyweights in MMA never taken off? They got some great fights. But I think, you know, you get these guys that they look at them and they go, I can take Demetrius Johnson, which you and I know is a joke, right? But there are people who say that, right? You know, that, you know, and they think that they could do so. They don't want to watch somebody that they think that they can just, you know, crush. And it's stupid, but that's it. And I think in the women's, you know, it's like, they're not very good. These women are great. There's a lot of really, you know, there's not as many good women as there are men because the opportunities aren't there. But there are a lot of really good female fighters. And if they were given opportunities, there would be a lot more of them. And I think, you know, you hit the nail on the head, Michael, when you look at the MMA and you look at the, you know, the women in MMA, there's a lot of really good ones and there's more coming in because there are opportunities for them to go up. And I think, you know, if you did that for the women in boxing, it would be the same way.
Kevin, earlier today, it was actually reported that Regis Prograis and Lou DiBella are in the process of, you know, splitting. I think there's a buyout coming or something like that. You know, Regis Prograis is obviously still a very great contender at 140 pounds. Where could you see him land in terms of the promoters during this, you know, landscape right now?
Top rank. I think they have the fighters that, you know, he's going to want to fight. They, you know, they have Jose Ramirez, they have Josh Taylor, you know, they have a lot of the guys right there are the champions, but they have a lot of other guys at that weight class. And I think, you know, that Regis, you know, the exposure that ESPN would give him. I love Regis. Regis is one of my favorite guys to interview, and I love watching him fight. And I think if you got him on a platform that had a lot of people watching him, you know, he hasn't had that yet. You know, he fought on Showtime where their biggest event, you know, get 500,000, 600,000. And then he fought, you know, on the World Super Series, where, you know, didn't have a lot of pickup and clearance on TV. If you get him out there, you know, he's got a great personality. You know, he's a, you know, fun fighter. He's a guy you like to watch. And, you know, if you watch this fight with Josh Taylor, you know, do I consider, you know, him a loser? Hell no. You know, I want to see him fight. There's so many fights out there I'd want to see. So I think Pro Gray's choice would be top rank. You know, if I had anything to say, I think that's what he'll do. And he'll be on that ESPN network where he'll get that kind of publicity that'll push him and make him into, I think Regis has a chance to be a really big star.
Kevin, any rumors out of Vegas about Conor McGregor's return? He put that tweet, that cryptic tweet about "I accept" in English. And then I think he put it also in, is it Filipino or
Tagalog? Yeah. Dana White said, and so for Conor to fight anything other than UFC, you know, he has to get permission from the UFC. Dana said he is not fighting in 2020. I am not making a fight for him. He is not going to fight in 2020. Dana has the ability to do that. Here's what I think is going on there. You know, Dana's trying to prove a point with Conor. You know, I don't need you. You think I need you, but I don't need you. And Conor obviously is the biggest draw in the sport. And so he deserves some flexibility. But he also has to understand the way things work. So he fought Donald Cerrone in January. They said to him, hey, look, we have Tony Ferguson and Habib ready to fight. Conor said himself at the press conference, that fight's never going to happen. Those two guys are never going to fight. We asked him in the media, the UFC also asked him, why don't you be the backup? Train for the fight, and that if one of them fall out, you can step in and, you know, fight the remaining guy. And to us in the media, he said, yes, I'll do it. But then when it came to negotiating time, he basically said, I'm not a backup. Mm-hmm. He wanted to fight, but he wanted to fight for the title. Well, they're not going to change all their plans. And, you know, he wasn't deserving of a title fight. And so I think, you know, Dana's finally saying, you know what, the only way to reel him in is to, you know, prove a point. I can be successful. You know, they just sold 1 million pay-per-views with the fight in Abu Dhabi. And, hey, I can do this without you. And it would be better with you, but I can do it without you. And I think that's really what's going on there. So I think what he would like to see is Conor come back and fight Habib. That would be his favorite if Habib beat Justin. But, you know, Habib is not all that interested in fighting Conor. And so there's so many, you know, it's a little bit crazy there.
Just, is Dana White still for more crossover fights? Because obviously we've had, you know, Conor and Pacquiao. Ngannou was, you know, supposedly matched up against quite a few of the different heavyweights. You've got Derek Chisora claims he's training to fight in Bellator later this year. So
I think the key word you said there about Conor was supposedly, you know, I think that was, you know, there's a lot of talk out there. And, you know, I think guys, you know, Tyson Fury said it right, you know, that he wanted to fight in MMA. But I think there's a big difference between saying you're thinking about doing it and then going ahead and doing it. And not all these fights are going to draw like Conor. You know, why do they want to do it? Because they looked at Conor and Floyd and said, oh, we're going to draw from both and we're going to get this huge number. But you had a really unique situation with Conor and Floyd. You know, you had the biggest boxing draw, you know, of his generation against the biggest MMA draw of all time, two guys that really could promote. And it kind of had this groundswell in building it. You know, Derek Chisora fighting in MMA, who cares? Like, nobody knows who he is, right? Nobody wants, you know, cares about that. And so I think that, you know, that's one of those things that it's just not going to work. I mean, he could do it and nobody would even know he did it. I think only certain fights, you know, Floyd fought Habib, that, you know, that would be a big fight. There's not many of them that I think would take the, you know, make the big money.
Is it true that Floyd actually signed for one boxing, one MMA, and then just backed out?
Yeah, no, that's not true.
You know, Kevin, you know, with all your years that you've been in the sport and still covering the sport, you know, you've obviously seen and heard, you know, a multitude of things. What was the first time, or maybe of all time, that you heard a fighter or a personality or a promoter or anything say something that just kind of just shocked you, or you just thought it was so stupid. You're just like, I can't believe they actually said that, or they actually did that. Like that one time when you were just like, what the hell's going on around here?
You know, Don King, I think, was the, you know, I was a big boxing fan before I ever got into it when I was a kid growing up. And I would watch all the fights on TV. I went to as many as I could. I used to read all the magazines and everything. So I was really into boxing big time. You know, the first time I started going to fights, I met Don King. And like, you know, Don King, especially back in the day, you know, he still can be crazy now, but he's almost 90 years old and he doesn't have the energy that he once had. But you ever go and talk to Don King and you hear some of the BS that he spews, I mean, you know, it's crazy. And so I think that probably was, in my regard, you know, the first time I had a great exposure to Don King was when I said, this is different than pretty much any other sport.
Kevin, do you think we'll see any fights next year at the new Raiders Stadium?
I do. I think once the thing is over that there will be, you know, some fights down there. I know UFC wants to put an event on there. You know, boxing has already looked into it. Top Rank had looked into putting Lomachenko and Wilder and Fury 3 in there, and like putting it in maybe like 30,000 seats. So I do think there's going to be a stadium in there. The question is going to be, you know, when are fans going to be allowed back in? You know, the Raiders announced recently that they're going to have no fans all season long. So, you know, if they're not going to allow fans to their games, they're not going to allow fans in there for, you know, for any other event. So, you know, we can safely say for the end of 2020, no, there'll be no fans in Allegiant Stadium.
Kevin, what do you think is the most realistic fight in terms of size, like, you know, attention? Like, I as of right now, it's probably Errol Spence and Danny Garcia, but that will happen this year.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think, you know, Spence and Garcia is a good fight. I don't know that it's a huge fight right. to the outside public. Like to us in the boxing bubble, it's a huge fight. Mm-hmm. But to us in the boxing bubble, we don't understand how little people outside the bubble know about these guys. And they don't know who Spencer Garcia is. And that is the right. absolute honest truth.
Right.
You know, so... boy, that's a tough one. You know, I would like to say, I guess Fury and Wilder, that, you know, they're still trying to put that on. So I guess that might be the one that I would point to, you know, unless we can get Inoue in the country. And then does him and Casimiro make a big fight? I don't know. It'll be a great fight.
It would. I mean, hopefully, you know, we're kind of going in the right path here with this whole pandemic thing, so we can kind of get more people in the stands and anything. I mean, have you heard anything in terms of states? Like, obviously Florida at the moment, or at least for the last couple months, has been letting some fans into professional wrestling events. They've put in a couple people, at least from what I've seen online and reports, like people posting on Twitter and you know, everything. I mean, do you think Florida might be the first one to say, okay, you know, we're going to put in all these guidelines and we'll let fans in, and then maybe we'll see boxing promoters start going to Florida?
I don't see Florida being it, because I don't know that here's the thing. You need to get a site fee or something to generate, especially if we're talking these big fights, right? Mm-hmm. If, you know, if we're talking a Fury Wilder or a Lomachenko Lopez or Crawford, you know, and Spencer, you know, fights like that, you need somewhere where they can pay the promoter some money up front. So that's why so many fights go to Las Vegas, and why so many fights, you know, go to Madison Square Garden, because they can pay those big site fees. And I think when you look at the boxing states, and you're going to, you know, say, okay, California would be able to do that because, you know, some entities there, you know, Las Vegas and Nevada would be able to do that, you know, New York. But then you, after that, you know, you're dropping down. So like, could I see, you know, maybe say a casino in Mississippi, like happened with Tyson and Lennox Lewis, you know, step up and say, hey, we want to host one of these big fights, and they have some money. But, you know, they're in tough financial spot too, because, you know, people aren't gambling as much as they used to. So the money isn't as free. So I think it's going to be difficult. You might see fans at events, at lower level events, but the really marquee events, I think it's going to still be a while.
Kevin, Frank Warren called out Eddie Hearn and Matchroom Promotions, I think it was last week, put up a poster of, you know, a card of just Matchroom fighters against Frank Warren fighters. You know, if that actually comes to fruition, do you think we'll ever see like a Top Rank Golden Boy, Top Rank against PBC? Or do you think it's just too much risk in case, you know, every single top ranked fighter loses?
I don't think there's too much risk, but I think the thing is there's no allegiance to the teams, right? So why do we, you know, if you're a sports fan and you like, you know, Manchester United, or you know, you like Chelsea or whoever it is that you like, you want to see those, you know, those teams. And same thing, you know, that, you know, like me, I'm a football fan. I want to see the Steelers, or I want to see the Golden Knights, you know, and who they go against. But there's no allegiance to Top Rank. So people look at that and say, what do I care? Top Rank and Golden Boy, you know, I don't have allegiance to either two. You know, they have allegiance to individual fighters. So I don't know that. I think that's like a stunt. You know, Frank is falling behind Eddie. You know, I love Frank. I think Frank's a good dude, but Frank has fallen behind Eddie. And so he's trying to get a stunt to bring himself back up and make himself look good at Eddie's expense. And he probably knows Eddie's going to say no. And then, oh, Eddie's running from me. And Frank can get himself in the media a lot by, you know, and his fighters in the media. You know, Eddie Hearn doesn't want to fight my guys. But I don't think it really makes a lot of sense, because I don't think there's, you know, people look at it in that same way as they do in team sports. Hmm.
What'd you think of the first time you heard or you saw photos of Eddie Hearn's childhood home with the ring back there and the whole setup? What was your first initial reaction to that?
I loved it. I thought it was great. You know, I mean, and I give Eddie credit for that. You know, he's willing to try those kind of things. And I think, you know, that's, you know, we need more. You know, he's creative. He's thoughtful. You know, he's very accessible to the media, as I'm sure you guys know. Mm. There, you know, not a lot of people are. And, you know, I think that when you do that and you get out there, you're making news and you're creating buzz about yourself and your fighters. And I think, you know, anything unusual helps. You know, it creates a little buzz around and gets people talking. I think it's good. You know, at the end of the day, they're climbing in a 20x20 ring and they're fighting with, you know, the same ropes and the same corner pads and everything. But because of where it is, it got people talking. I think it's brilliant.
I do love the back and forth between Eddie Hearn and a good friend of yours, Bob Arum. They're always funny.
Yeah, no, Bob, especially as he's gotten older, he will just let go at any time, you know. And so Eddie tries to get him. I think the fun one is those Lou DiBella and Eddie Hearn. And when DiBella was promoting Deontay Wilder, Eddie Hearn went, well, I don't know if you guys saw it, but walking around the streets of New York with a camera and a microphone going up to people, and do you know who Deontay Wilder
is? He did do that.
Classic.
He did do that.
Kevin, I know Bob Arum said in a few interviews he's actually open to selling Top Rank and has been for a few years. Do you think he actually is?
Well, I have talked to him, and I've talked to his stepson, Todd DeBuff, who is the president of Top Rank. And, you know, basically what they say is, you know, anything is available for a price. But, you know, Bob knows, you know, he's 90 years old, then, you know, he's looking to – if he can make it easier to pass it on to his family by having cash as opposed to giving them a business, you know, what's the business worth without Bob Arum behind it? That is the question, right? You know, are these kids going to be able to go in there who've never been involved, who've never had anything, you know, and you just turn it over to them. Is it worth anything to them? You know, that's the question. You know, Bob Arum makes it what it is. Like, Bob Arum is Top Rank. And so I think, you know, he was looking at maybe, you know, if he could cash it out, then when he passed, you know, it would be easy for his money to go directly from him to his children. But I don't think he's really actively looking to sell it.
I've always thought that about Matt Trim, because Eddie Hearn, like you touched on, is such a salesman that anybody that follows him is going to be like following Bill Belichick or right. Phil Jackson.
Yeah, that's tough. Starting with Ali. And so I think, you know, it's a tough act to follow. And, you know, If his kids were involved in the business, like when Dan Goosen passed, you know, his kids had been involved. And so his brother-in-law, Tom Brown, is, you know, running what used to be his promotion now, you know, TB Promotions. Craig Goosen was involved for a while, Dan's son. But that was a family affair. You don't have that as much with Top Rank. And so I just don't think that, you know, it's going to be the same for the family.
Kevin, you know, before we let you go here, you know, obviously we appreciate your time on this Monday evening. I did want to get your thoughts on the whole Pauly Malignaggi situation, just because obviously he was a staple on that commentary team with Showtime for many, many years. And a lot of fans really appreciated the way he looked at things, his analysis and everything. And obviously, you know, Showtime made the decision to let him go. What's your take on that whole situation?
Well, you know, I felt Paulie, you know, was unfortunate. He said, apparently said some things in the past and that we don't know about in addition to, you know, what he said now. But I look at it, I go, what did he say that was so bad, right? I mean, I am very virulently in favor of civil rights, and I want to see minority people do well, but I don't think, and I'm sensitive to discrimination, but I don't think what Paulie said was, you know, anything terrible. And so I'm not sure why, you know, why they felt the need, the need to let him go. I kind of felt like it was the wrong thing to do at the wrong time. I think you talk to him, you know, and we, you know, you're representing our brand. We don't want these kind of, you know, comments associated with our brand and go that way. You know, and while I may not agree with what he said, I don't think it was so outrageous that he deserved to be fired. What I don't know is what happened behind the scenes on things where, you know, things that maybe didn't get as much public attention as this particular one did that they talked to him about. I know Steven Espinoza has basically said that's been the case, that this isn't the first time that he's had a number of issues and that they've warned him before and he had it. So, you know, from that standpoint, if your boss is telling you don't do this and you do that, then you have to pay the consequences. But I didn't think what he said, you know, was that bad to merit being fired.
What I thought was kind of ironic is that the only thing I can think of is that it came above Steven Espinoza, because Steven Espinoza, at least on Twitter, is very vocal about his politics sometimes, like especially when he's tweeting back about against Donald Trump and everything. So, I mean, I'm sure Espinoza was involved in some form or fashion, but I don't know. What would your take on that be? Do you think it was made above his pay grade?
Okay. I think Espinoza was the one that made the call, and I believe he had that authority to make that kind of call. And what we don't know is what was going on, you know, behind the scenes that we weren't aware of. That's the only thing. But I agree with you, you know, I mean, and hey, if you're a liberal like Espinoza is, you know, you should allow him to say what he, I mean, he did not say, you know, if you use the N word or, you know, you're disparaging toward, you know, toward another race, you know, that's one thing. Then, okay. Or, you know, to, you know, toward any kind of, you know, perceived bias. Okay. Then fire him. But, you know, to say, oh, you know, there's not a lot of blacks in boxing anymore. You may disagree with that, but what was the problem with what he said? That's what I don't understand. And so I think, you know, I think Espinoza made the call, but I thought it was the wrong call.
Well, Kevin, you know, we appreciate your valuable time here jumping on the Last Run again for the second time. You know, obviously before we let you go, I'm sure a lot of people already know who you are who are listening to this. So, but just in case they don't, and we have maybe some casual listeners listening to some boxing knowledge for the first time, go ahead and tell them where they can follow you online.
Well, you can follow me on Twitter at Kevin I, K-E-V-I-N-I, and on Instagram, my full name at Kevin Ioli, K-E-V-I-N-I-O-L-E. And of course, all my stories are at Yahoo Sports.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, we appreciate it, Kevin. And, you know, you have a good rest of your night, and you're always more than welcome to jump back on anytime.
I appreciate you guys. Thanks so much. Enjoyed it.
Thanks, Kevin.
Thank you. Kevin Ioli, man. Hey, man, we're on a roll with these veteran reporters in the game, man. You know, Dougie Fisher, Kevin Ioli. Who am I missing? We have somebody else.
Trying to think who we've had recently. I can't remember. Luke, we have so many.
We're on such a roll, Mike. We're already forgetting.
We've had what? Mannix, Chris. We've had Mark Regal.
Right.
So, yeah, we've had a lot of different ones over the space of 92 episodes now.
92 episodes. But we are over 100 easily. So
100, and I think this will be 112.
Yeah, if including the episodes that we've done at events, obviously before this pandemic. So hopefully we can start going to events again, at least more consistently in the future. But, you know, let's go into the reviews since we did have some boxing on this past weekend. Eddie Hearn, your favorite or mine, puts up another edition of his backyard fights. What do you call it? A backyard square garden? Or what'd you say?
There's a few names in there. There's Matchroom Square Gardens, and then there's Matchroom Fight Camp, I think is the official name.
Right. So it was this past Friday, the 7th of August from, like you said, Essex. Essex is a city. This is all your motherland, Mike.
I know. Al, do you want me to take it? So it was Friday, the 7th of August, Matchroom Fight Camp from Essex, live on DAZN over here in the US. And the headliner was Terry Harper, now 10-1 with a split draw against Natasha Jonas, who is now 9-1-1. This was for the WBC and IBO super featherweight title. Close fight. I thought it pretty much went down to the last couple of rounds. I think it's one of those ones where you could have given it to Terry by one round. You could have given it to Natasha by one round. So I think a draw was, you know, probably the right decision. I think they're going to probably run it back, it looks like, in December, maybe on the undercard of the Anthony Joshua Pulev fight. I know that Terry Harper has been going at it on social media with Michaela Mayer, mm-hmm. back and forth. So good fight, though. Good headlining fight. Another good headlining fight for the Matchroom Square Gardens. And then also on the card, we had Chris Billum-Smith, 11-1. Against Nathan Trolley, 14-1. This was for the Commonwealth Cruiserweight title. Chris Billum-Smith won by TKO in round two. Looks a very good prospect. He looks the part. He's a good talker. And then obviously, you know, he's getting the right results with just that one loss on his record so far. And then you either love him or you hate him. Mr. Anthony Fowler, 13-1. Got the TKO 7 over Adam Harper. Yeah, I think the change of trainer for Anthony Fowler, you know, he's now with McGuigan, changed from Dave Caldwell. I think he's coming along well. I thought his jab had improved massively. He sort of has that very odd style, very kind of robotic with his arms out in front of him. But yeah, he looked a lot better. He looked powerful. You could really hear him, you know, raining down the punches on Adam Harper, who looked a little bit outmatched. And then lastly on that card, we had Hopi Price, now 3-0 against Johnny Phillips, who's 5-5. This went the full six rounds, points decision. Good test for Hopi Price against Johnny Phillips, who was in there, just tried to outman him, really, just a bigger, stronger character. He came in overweight, got told to lose. I think it was 2 pounds. You know, his trainer and Dave Caldwell went at it a bit at the weigh-in. He lost the pounds. And, you know, Hopi Price just kind of went in there and just very amateur boxing, slick, kind of moved him around a little bit and, you know, got an easy points decision over him.
I saw Eddie Hearn give a recent interview because he was obviously getting criticism for the fights he's been putting on in his backyard. But I think he was saying that this next one that's coming up, like, this is going to be the best one. You know, obviously he has his promoter hat on. But I think it's tough because, you know, like I think we touched on this at the beginning of this pandemic, when especially with Top Rank came back, you know, these promoters have contracts with these fighters and they guarantee them a certain amount of fights every year that they have to offer them. So, you know, you kind of just have to put them out there like these guys are doing. And yeah, I mean, like, the ratings might not be as strong as you want them to be because there's no, you know, mainstay star headlining or anything, but you know, you got to get the ball rolling somehow, I guess.
And it's hard as well, you know, when you can only pick from, you know, he's tried to make it just domestic level. You know, there's only so many fighters in the UK, same as, you know, for the US. And, you know, are you going to have people on standby because, you know, you've had those top rank cards where, you know, big fights, headlining fights have fallen out. I think the UFC the other week had, I think, like 10 people tested positive and fell out for various reasons. And, you know, I think two of them fainted backstage and stuff like that. So, you know, it's not as easy as just putting the fights together, especially in this day and age with, you know, the pandemic we're going through.
Absolutely. And this past Saturday, the 8th of August, from the Microsoft Theater in Los Angeles on Fox. So Fox's debut back in the boxing game during this COVID pandemic time. And the first fight in Los Angeles, you know, regardless if there's crowd or not. Jamal James, 27-1, gets the 12-round unanimous decision over Thomas Delorme for the vacant interim, talk about alphabet titles, WBA welterweight title. Manny Pacquiao has the full welterweight world title at 147 pounds, and this was an interim. I mean, I think, you know, Kevin Ioli touched on, you know, belts. There's a bunch of belts everywhere, and it's just kind of a mess. But in terms of this, you know, I don't think it's a secret, especially to us, that television networks want some type of title involved so they can promote it, so it can add more legitimacy to the bout, right?
Yeah, I believe so. I think that, you know, you always watch the, you know, the world title fights, whether it be in wrestling or boxing or UFC, you know, they want on the poster, they want a belt draped over somebody's shoulder, around somebody's waist, because it brings the fans in, whether it be us hardcore fans or, you know, the casual fans, as people call them. But, you know, Jamal James did the right thing. He got the win, and then obviously called out, you know, the payday, trying to get Manny Pacquiao. So,
hey, but he's getting a little bit of PR about that. Like, he's getting attention of it. Obviously, people are going to be like, who are, like, I saw some comments and stuff like that. Like, you know, who are you to call out Manny Pacquiao and stuff like that? And I think even Sean Gibbons responded to a Boxing Scene article saying, pretty much kind of calling him out, like, who are you again, like, to call out Manny Pacquiao? But, you know, he got attention out of it, you know, like, I think it was kind of a smart marketing tactic to do, because, you know, he associates his name with somebody bigger like that. I mean, it happens, but he's, you know, he got some attention out of it. But I guess he has an interim WBA welterweight world title. I mean, I don't think that just because he has a piece of the same title that Manny Pacquiao has at 147 pounds, I don't think people should expect at all that he's going to get in there with Manny Pacquiao. Just because Manny Pacquiao is like one of the rare fighters that doesn't need a belt to fight. He's above the world titles, and he just has them just because he has them. But because of his status and his profile, he's bigger than the belts. So, but I don't think people should expect a Jamal James Manny Pacquiao fight, unless you want to see him, Mike.
No, you know, Manny's just looking for those big paydays before he, you know, walks off into the sunset, into retirement. So, you know, he's looking for those huge names, which is, you know, why are you seeing people like him linked to a Conor McGregor fight, a crossover fight, to see how much attention that gathers, to see if it's, you know, viable for them to make, you know, like $100 million each or whatever.
Right. I get it. Fight previews this weekend, the 14th of August, this Friday. Another Matchroom Fight Camp in Essex on DAZN. Headlined by Felix Cash, 12-0 against Jason Wellborn, 24-8 for the Commonwealth middleweight title. What do you think about that?
Should be a good fight. You know, Jason Wellborn, people in the U.S. might remember him. He fought Jarrett Hurd on the undercard of Wilder and Tyson Fury 1. Kind of gave a good couple of rounds until Jarrett Hurd decided to turn it up and just get him out of there. I think Felix Cash should really win it. I think he's just got more tools of the trade to get rid of Jason Wellborn, who's a little bit one-dimensional. But it's not too bad. Domestic clash. This is not a bad card. No, not big names on it, but I think there's some good solid fights on this card.
Also on that card, Zelpha Barrett. I hope I said that right. 23-1 against Eric Donovan, 12-0. And then Kieran Conway, 14-1-1 against Navid, Missouri.
Mansouri
for the vacant WBA Intercontinental Super Welterweight title. Damn, that's a mouthful. So what do you think about that at 154 pounds?
That's a two better fight. Kieran Conway, I think, should really win that. And then Zelpha Barrett against Eric Donovan is probably one of those quiet sleeper fights, which could be better than the main event. So, good couple of domestic dust-ups.
And then also rounding out that card, John Doherty,
8-0 against Anthony Fox, 8-12-4. Good showcase fight, really, for John Doherty. He looks a heavy-handed fighter. And then also the women's fight that I think people have, you know, the fans like to see, Shannon Courtney. She's in there 5-0 against Rachel Ball. Those two have been going back and forth on social media a little bit. Rachel Ball said that she's been looking for this fight since Shannon Courtney turned pro. So that should be a good step up for Rachel Ball. She's a little bit more aggressive than some of the fighters that Shannon Courtney's been in there with earlier in her career.
I hope none of these 5-0 records are replays of what happened to Sunisa Estrada back in... Because like I think she hit her opponent had like a 5-0 record, I think. Like, so every time I keep seeing 5-0, that's the first thing I think about, just because it's been so recent.
I see that the Ring magazine did a look into it, like a deep dive into that record, and it seems like they were all put on like Kansas shows, and I think the majority of the people she fought were all like debut fighters that were actually strippers.
Oh man. Can boxing get any crazier? Really?
No, I don't think so.
Well, actually,
all... there was that good piece for people who read the Ring magazine or want to read up on this about the guy in somewhere in southern US where he was pretending to be the IBF light heavyweight champion. And he was going on local radio shows and local TV shows as the champ, but he wasn't.
I don't understand how. The only thing I can think of is that, like, these radio shows are just so remote, or they're older people running these radio shows or hosting these radio shows or something, because you can easily Google that.
Yeah, just go to PunkTrek.
Which I don't understand how that happened, how he got away with that. Like, what? The guy wasn't saying he was just a champion. He was saying he was a unified champion.
Yeah.
He had multiple titles.
He still does. I follow him on Facebook.
Oh, wow.
He still goes around saying it.
Wow.
Puts pictures of himself training every day, going running every day.
Hey, you got to respect the confidence, Mike. Mm-hmm. If he thinks he's a champion, he's a champion. You know, maybe it's a self-esteem thing. Who knows? Who knows? Also, this Saturday, the 15th of August, DAZN comes to the U.S. Actually, no, for the second time, because the first American card was the Indio, California with Virgil Ortiz, right? So this is the second American card in Tulsa, Oklahoma?
The first Matchroom only since the coronavirus, I would say.
Right. So this one's headlined by Cecilia Brecuse, the unified champion at 54 pounds, right? 36-0. Yeah, 36-0, that's very impressive, man. Regardless, that's extremely impressive. Goes up against Jessica McCaskill, 8-2 for the undisputed welterweight world title. Obviously, we touched on this a little bit last week with Tom Loeffler of 360 Promotions. You know, obviously, I think the stock, DAZN has a stock in Cecilia Brecuse, just because there's obviously potential matchups to make with her and some of the bigger female fighters. You know, I mean, what do you think about this matchup?
I think DAZN and Matchroom are obviously wanting, you know, Cecilia Brecuse to win this fight because Katie Taylor, you know, the winner of Delphine Pursoon and Katie Taylor, they're hoping that they can match, you know, Brecuse against Taylor for a big, unified, undisputed, you know, women's super fight, really. Katie Taylor's already fought Jessica McCaskill and beaten her earlier in her career. So I think they're putting all their eggs in the basket, hoping that they could get that big European fight. You know, McCaskill is a good fighter. She's kind of like rough and ready, very more not polished. I would say, you know, Brecuse is definitely the more polished fighter. McCaskill's kind of like, I don't want to insult her, but like a rough and ready inside fighter will probably be a good way to describe her.
Right.
So I think, you know, if Brecuse is going to win, I think she needs to just really work on a box and stay on the outside and not let, you know, McCaskill get in. So
what if she gets a KO? Like a nasty KO.
Let's hope so. You know, we need, like we touched on earlier with Kevin Ioli, we need more, you know, women's fights to be three-minute rounds, and we need more KOs because that's what's going to, you know, make the evolution. Because if you're a woman at the minute and you decided you wanted to be a fighter and you weren't too sure whether you're going to take the MMA route or are you going to take the boxing route, with how much the women's stars are in the UFC, you know, Ronda Rousey, Holly Holm, Amanda Nunes, you would definitely pick the UFC because, you know, the star fighters in boxing is Katie Taylor, Clarissa Shields, probably the two.
Right.
Cecilia Brecuse in parts of Europe, but not really in the US or I would say in the UK.
Right. No, you're right. You're right. Yeah, that's a fair criticism. You know, and also on that card, Israel Madrimov, 5-0, goes up against Eric Walker. What do you think about that bout?
I love Madrimov. I think he's a great fighter. You know, trains locally with Joel Diaz. Just definitely one to watch. I think he should win that. Eric Walker's not too bad a fighter. I think he was the guy that was recently on the contender. But Madrimov all day for me.
All right, you're going to have to pronounce his next name, Mike.
Shakram Gayasov, another one that trains with Joe Diaz against Francisco Hernandez Rojo, 22-3. Another Eastern European fighter to watch out for out of that Joe Diaz camp. Gayasov, great fighter. I think he should really win that. Raymond Ford is the next one up, 5-0 against Eric. Is it Mancrias? 7-10-1. Raymond Ford really should win this. Good up-and-coming fighter at that Matchroom stable. You know, Ari kind of like talking the talk, saying he wants some of the big-name fighters. Eric Mancrias, you might recognize him. He's on a lot of these Matchroom shows, kind of like as a journeyman.
Yeah, I know. It's Manriquez.
Manriquez, you know, Mexican kid covered in tattoos. Always gives a good account of himself. I always think he's one of those journeymen that really pushes people, makes them work. Nikita Abaye, 8-0 against Jarvis Williams, 8-2-1. Should be a good fight. Nikita always tries to get in there and just blow people out, which is obviously good at the start of his career. Tries to get some, you know, as many eyes on him as he can. And then a friend of the show, Mark Castro, again, up against Raul Corona, not Ray Corona, the referee, 2-3. What do you think of that, Danny? Obviously, we know Mark, and we were there when he had his interview or his, you know, talk with Eddie Hearn when he actually signed with
Max. Yeah, that was pretty much when he got signed. Like, it was that day in Phoenix, Arizona, for the Chavez Jr. Daniel Jacobs fight. It was the day after, it was the morning after the fight. We were in the lobby of the hotel, and we saw Eddie Hearn, you know, kind of mingling with different people where the, you know, where the breakfast tables were at and a little bar and stuff like that. And then for maybe an hour or so, wouldn't you say that he was right there with Mark Castro and his family, just talking to him. And then
flew them in on a private jet. You remember the pictures that Castro put in?
Yeah, he flew him in on the private jet from Fresno, California. I think the kid's from Fresno, California. And then, you know, Eddie Hearn jumped on the podcast just after that, obviously. And that was one of the questions we asked about him. And, you know, in terms of Mark Castro, just because, you know, he was at that point one of the most sought after amateur fighters that was unsigned. And he said, yeah, we had a conversation, you know, just kind of showing him, kind of bringing him around fighters and stuff like that, you know, other professional fighters, and bringing him around the show, see what he likes and stuff like that. So, but I mean, like you said, he probably got signed that day, or he signed with Matchroom shortly after. It seems like it. But I'm excited to see how he does. Obviously, as a in making his pro debut, especially on a big platform like DAZN, under a major promoter like Eddie Hearn's Matchroom Boxing, obviously they don't want him to fail, so this should be like a setup win, you know, to showcase his skills to the world on DAZN.
Which is normal for all, you know, guys making their debut, apart from Lomachenko.
Right. Especially with the stock they have invested in this kid. So, you know, I think it's funny when a couple sporting outlets started picking up his videos that he's starting to do in the gym. Some people call him Elon Musk. I think it's kind of funny because I never put two and two together like that. He kind of does look like him. So if they ever meet and there's a picture of them together, people are going to be like, that's his kid, man. I'm telling you.
I know that he posted a picture of him and like Elon Musk. And I just hope that he doesn't get distracted by all the social media, because I know that he's already got, like, you know, he signed with Matchroom, looks like he got a nice signing on bonus. I think he signed up with Gymshark. I think even him and Elon Musk may be doing something with Tesla or SpaceX. So I hope that he just doesn't get sidetracked away from, you know, the bread and butter of the boxing, and, you know, concentrates on that, because you don't want to see the young kid fail and go down that, you know, Broner or Gervonta Davis, where, you know, things outside of the ring kind of take over and he doesn't fulfill the potential that he has. You know, when we had him on the podcast, you know, he spoke well, he seemed, you know, very mature, and he seemed to know what he wants and how he's going to do it.
Mm-hmm. No, you're right. I have faith in the guy. I have confidence in him that he's going to be fine. He seems like he trains hard and he works hard. He's obviously worked hard to get where he's at. I think the turning point was when he started hanging out with Ryan Garcia a lot more, because he went down to San Diego a couple times and worked out down there at Canelo's gym with Eddie Reynoso, and obviously Ryan was there and stuff, because that's when he started posting more online, different videos. And, you know, I get it. He gets a lot of attention. He started getting, in terms of marketing for his image, it's great because it's giving him more publicity. It's raising his profile. So there's nothing necessarily wrong with that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like you said, just kind of, the biggest thing is that he doesn't get distracted about that lifestyle. And because he's obviously a good fighter to get to this point, and he puts in the work and he keeps working hard, which I believe he is going to. I think he should be fine. But, you know, I'm sure he had a conversation or two with Ryan Garcia where Ryan told him, hey, you know, you should post, man. Like, people watch, man. It gets your profile up. And I mean, it's true. It you know, regardless if you hate him or you love him, it is true if you know how to market yourself like that. But like you said, hopefully it doesn't go like the Ryan Garcia route where there's kind of issues there and all this stuff. And, you know, he keeps dedicating himself in the gym to, you know, obviously get to a world title. And also rounding up the previews of this weekend on BT Sport from the BT Sports Studios in London on ESPN Plus, headlined by Carl Frampton, 27-2 against Darren Trainer, 16-3. Trainer's actually a replacement opponent. Who was the original opponent before they got substituted?
I can't remember the guy's name now. It wasn't anyone. Yeah. I can't remember anyone big. It was another kind of give me another little warm up before the potential, you know, Jermell Herring fight, because, you know, I think it was around this time of year, maybe was it a little bit later, we should have really have been seeing the Jermell Herring Carl Frampton fight, you know, over in Ireland. It looked like Jermell Herring was, you know, willing to go over there, you know, for a big payday, big stadium fight in front of the fans, give Carl Frampton the chance to become a three-weight world champion. But unfortunately, due to this pandemic, it's been put off. You know, Carl should hopefully win this. Jermell Herring should hopefully beat Jonathan... Is it
Oquendo?
Oquendo. The third attempt, you know, due to the coronavirus. And then two wins, and hopefully we get to see that matchup, whether it's behind closed doors or not, due to this. So it's a great, great fight.
Great, great fight. Hopefully the Herring-Frampton matchup happens probably sometime next year, kind of at least based on this timeline right now. Also on that card, Troy Williamson, 14-0-1 against Harry Scarf, 8-1. What do you think of that matchup?
Good fight, up-and-coming prospects. Another kind of local domestic dust-up for that one. I see the A-side kind of taking that overall.
Right. Also on that card, 18-0, Archie Sharp against 10-2-1, Jeff Ofori. Did I say that right?
Yeah, Ofori, yeah. Archie Sharp, good up-and-coming fighter. Another one to watch. Good, kind of good with the media, good-looking kid. One of those guys that you could kind of see going fine. Just hopefully keeps his head down, concentrates, you know, keeps just kind of fulfilling all these fights. You know, he's getting the platform to fight on BT Sport, so he should, you know, have lots of fans on him. Go in there, do the job, get people talking about you during this pandemic.
And then top ranks, Michael Conlan, 13-0, comes back, returns to the ring against Sofyan Taugouch, 35-4-1. What do you think?
Not a bad matchup for Mick Conlan, but it's the same fighter that Josh Warrington fought. You know, Josh Warrington, I think, got him out of there, I think, in four rounds. So, you know what everyone's going to do? Everyone's going to compare him to, you know, Josh Warrington. So, you know, Conlan either needs to get him out of there early, or everyone's just, you know, if he takes like 8, 9, 10 rounds to get him out of there, everyone's going to be like, ah, you know, Mick Conlan's not going to be a world champion. You know, Josh Warrington blew that guy out of there in four rounds.
Right.
So, but maybe I mean, not like, the best choice of opponent.
But it's a marketing tactic. Like, Top Rank is hoping that he blows him out before. I mean, you don't think they had that conversation? Like, hey, you know.
Would you, though? Like, has Mick Conlan blown anybody out, really, out of all of his opponents? No,
I know, but, like, I mean, obviously Top Rank and ESPN, to an extent, is hoping for that, because then they can tie his name to somebody like a Josh Warrington and kind of, you know, spin it, do, like, a spin narrative right there. I mean, that's what happens, you know?
We're going to look for, like, a phantom punch, some body shot that just takes the guy down like a sniper.
Yeah, I mean, you never know. That's the goal. That's obviously the goal, because then they can use it for publicity. And oh yeah, he beat the guy. You know, he beat him faster than Josh Warrington did. That it's a marketing tactic. So that's what they're hoping for. And then let's see how it goes. And then your favorite fight of this weekend, obviously, is Dennis McCann, 6-0 against your favorite of mine, the dreaded TBA.
The unbeaten TBA. Dennis McCann, big fan of him. You know, I think he's got great skills, puts his combination of his punches together really well, talks well, looks the part, goes in there, tries to take people out. As soon as he sees the hurt, he just jumps on him, does everything really that you want out of someone coming through the ranks. You know, people keep saying he's the next Prince Nazim, so, you know, big accolades there on top of his young shoulders. But hopefully they, you know, move him along slowly but surely, and he'll go through the English, the British, Commonwealth, European, up to world level. You know, don't push him too quick. But he's, you know, very good to watch.
Very good to watch. I think you've said you're the next Prince Nazim a couple times off air.
The retired, big fat Nazim, yeah.
The retired. See, that's the difference. That's different. But once again, guys, thank you guys for listening to this episode. This was a little longer than usual. We went about 20 minutes over our normal hour. timeline here. And big thanks again to Mr. Kevin Ioli of Yahoo Sports for jumping on again here on the last round. And before we wrap up here, Mike, go ahead and tell them about the socials one more time.
So it's at the last round 12 on Twitter and Instagram. And then obviously next week we'll be reviewing the fights we just spoke about. And then also be previewing the big Katie Taylor, Delphine Persoon, Dillian White and Povetkin card.
Oh yeah. Next weekend is the final, or supposed to be the final card of the backyard games of Eddie Hearn's Matchroom, right?
Yeah, then he has, you know, a stadium fight booked up in Newcastle, and he also has a stadium fight booked in Cardiff for the Lee Selby. So, you know, time will tell whether they're going to keep those and do those just behind closed doors, or will he cancel those and just move them to Matchroom Square Gardens?
You're right. Only time will tell. So for once again, for my co-host Michael Shepherd, I'm Danny Z. This is the last round.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This is the last round.